This is The Gaggle with David Helfenbein.
This week on The Gaggle, we have on Tara Stettmeyer. Tara is a CNN political commentator, columnist for The Daily Beast, and a former communications director on Capitol Hill. She is also a regular guest host on SiriusXM's Patriot and POTUS channels. Tara, it is a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited. I love doing things like this.
My first question for you is how you got to where you are today in terms of political commentating. Did you always have a plan to do something like this, or did you get there by happenstance?
This was absolutely not where I expected to be if you had asked me 5 or 10 years ago, what would you be doing now? I've always been an advocate. I have an advocate's heart since I was a kid. I've always seemed to get myself into situations where I was standing up for other people or being the voice for someone that didn't have the courage to stand up for themselves. So I would either encourage them to do it or take up the mantle. I mean, it's been like that since I was in the first grade. My first grade principal told my mother that I was either going to be a politician or a lawyer because I seemed to have kids get in and out of situations before they even realized they were in or out of them. So that's how I got into politics and why I'm so passionate about things. But being on television was really not the goal. It's something that seemed to happen organically. I went to college at George Washington University and basically moved. I'm from Jersey originally, so I went to D.C. with the intention of getting involved in politics and basically never left for 20 years. And during that time, since I was in college, I seemed to have a knack for media. And it started with radio, and then it graduated to local television and some small cable network cable stations. And then one day in 1998, I had the opportunity to do a national cable program during the Clinton impeachment hearings. And the rest is history.
Let's talk a little bit about working on Capitol Hill. How long did you work there? Who did you work for? What was it like? What did you like about it?
Yeah, so during my time on Capitol Hill, I spent 7 years there as the communications director for Congressman Dana Rohrabacher from California. And Dana is one of the coolest members of Congress ever. He's just so down to earth. And, you know, he's more of a people person than he is a politician. There's nothing conventional politician about him. He was a Reagan speechwriter for 7.5 years during the Reagan administration. And he was a rabble rouser then. And he's got a heart of gold. And working for him was the highlight of my political career. And during that time, I got to do so many amazing things. And I really had an opportunity to do things on a daily basis that impacted people's lives. And that's why I got into politics. You know, some people are motivated by power. They're motivated by attention and money. And that's never been my motivation. It's always been to have an impact on people's lives. And I had the opportunity to do that working with Congressman Rohrabacher. He actually did something that was really unconventional, which was allow me to do media while I worked for him. It was unheard of for the communications director or the press secretary in a congressional office to do media themselves. Their job usually was to get their boss on television. But Dana saw me as a partner as opposed to an employee. He told me that he saw me as a partner in the fight for freedom and that we were a 1-2 punch, and that why would he want to suppress my natural talent and my natural communication skills just because I worked on Capitol Hill. So that was something that I was really appreciative that he gave me the opportunity to continue to do political commentary on television, advocating on behalf of, you know, his causes and what we were doing. And I got involved in a case with two Border Patrol agents who had been unjustly prosecuted down in Texas for shooting an illegal alien drug smuggler. And it turned into a big national case. And I ended up becoming like the Aaron Brockovich of that case because Dana is, you know, being from Southern California, he's big on border security and illegal immigration. Those were important issues to him. So when he found out about this case in Texas, I brought it to his attention. And he said, oh, no, there's something wrong here. This is an injustice. You have carte blanche to use the authority of this office and whatever we need to do to help these guys. and it turned into an over 2.5 year major case. And we ultimately were able to secure a commutation for both those agents. Their names were Ramos and Compion. And we were able to secure a presidential commutation to them in Bush's last day in office. But it wasn't without a national effort from grassroots all the way to members of Congress. And it was quite the fight. But Dana allowed me to be the general there in that whole thing, which really, it changed my life. It's by far to this day my greatest accomplishment in my adult life so far.
What issues are most important to you?
Well, you know, I look at things from a really large macro view oftentimes because I just have the ability to discern and look at things and how they impact everyday life. So issues of culture are important to me. I look at how pop culture and entertainment and how those things influence our everyday lives. And I come from a blue-collar family in Jersey. My mom, I'm the first person to go to college in my family. My mom was a single parent until I was 15. My grandfather was captain of our police department locally for 40 years. He was a volunteer fireman for 70 and a World War II veteran. So I come from a very traditional, you know, waving flags on 4th of July Day parade kind of thing. So I just look at how, issues of how people can be inspired to be successful, love this country, and to take advantage of everything that's great about America. And that comes from a very positive perspective. So the issues that I find important are issues of culture, of family, education. Frederick Douglass said education is the key to freedom, and I wholly believe that, wholeheartedly. Education is a huge issue because I think a lot of the problems that we see today, especially in minority communities, is a lack of quality education, and then therefore people feel as though they don't have any options. And it shouldn't be that way. It's the greatest country in the world, and the opportunities are limitless, but people have to believe that those opportunities are for them. So, and that doesn't always, there's a lot of communities that don't feel that way. So I feel like I can use my position and my talents and my access and my knowledge and personality to encourage people to take advantage of those opportunities and be successful. So those are some of that's a kind of a broad view of the issues that are important to me. But there's a lot of issues. I'm very, like I said, I grew up in a law enforcement family. My husband's a federal law enforcement officer. I think that law and order and respect for authority are very, very important. And in this climate today with what's been going on, I think there needs to be a voice of reason that also stands up for our law enforcement officers. Not saying there are legitimate grievances and that there can't be reforms, but I think the rhetoric has gotten way out of control and to the point of dangerous. And I have no problem standing up for what I think is right on that side of things.
You describe yourself as a conservative. What is a conservative today?
Well, given the fact that Donald Trump has hijacked the Republican Party, I don't know how other people want to define conservatism, but I can tell you that it sure as hell isn't what Donald Trump is doing. That's number one. I just want to make sure I get that out there. But conservatism is more than just a party label. It's a way of life for many of us. It's our worldview. It's how we live our lives, how we raise our families, how we run our businesses. So it's something, it's a set of principles that govern the way we live our lives every day, as opposed to Republican, capital R, which is a party structure by the way that we rally behind certain policy initiatives and get people elected. It's a party apparatus. But as a conservative, I think it's very easily defined as someone who believes in limited government, you know, less government in your life every day, get the government out of your way to build your business, in empowering the individual as opposed to government coming in, not allowing yourself to be a victim, strong national defense, strong border security, and a lot of people would say traditional family values, but, you know, I think that's up for interpretation. Some people will define that differently. I'm from New Jersey, so a little bit different being a conservative from New Jersey than being a conservative from other parts of the country, but the basic principles are the same. And I think the empowering the individual, adhering to the Constitution, getting the government out of our lives and letting individuals make their own decisions for their families for the most part, and private business and free market capitalism is what makes this country great.
I'll get to your views on Trump in a little bit. I want to ask you, though, how you deal with it when you are on a panel and you are the only one with conservative views, or you are going up against a lot of people who have different views other than yours.
That's been the story of my life. I'm a minority female conservative. So I've been put in those situations often over the years. And some people on the left find me to be a novelty. They think it's like, wow, they do exist, you know. Look, I've never been a stranger to hostile situations. I feel as though I handle those situations quite well because I don't fear. I have no fear. And I believe strongly in what I believe, but I also back up a lot of it with facts and logic and rational thought, where some people can be very emotional and they can't back their positions up with facts, and then it turns into something a little bit more out of control. But I try very hard to be empathetic of a differing viewpoint. And I'll listen, and you know what? Maybe we may find common ground. Usually the way I approach things is I try to find a point of common ground and take it from there, which may be a different approach than some other people, because it's not about me proving that I'm right or, you know, finger wagging and trying to denigrate someone else because we have a difference of opinion. It's really more explaining why I think my opinion is better or why I think my position on something is better as far as a solution. And here's why. So that's always been my approach. So being thrust into hostile situations is par for the course in this business, and I never shy away from that. And usually I come out of that situation with people respecting me for sticking to my guns, respecting me for my integrity, and if they think about their position differently than they did before we had that conversation, then I consider that to be a win.
How does the Republican Party gain minority voters?
I've got to tell you, I've been involved in Republican Party politics for 20 plus years, since I was 18 years old, my freshman year in college. I was vice chairman of the College Republicans at George Washington. I started a conservative volunteer organization while I was there. I was a very loyal soldier in the Republican Party. Throughout that time, I really felt it was important for the Republican Party to expand and for minority communities to hear what Republican principles and policies were, how they could affect their lives in a positive way from messengers they didn't expect to hear them from. And I thought I would be one of those. But it was a very frustrating exercise because the party, even though they say that they want to appeal to diverse audiences and constituencies, their approach to how they do that is antiquated and ineffective. And that bears out in the numbers where you see, particularly in presidential election years, how god-awful the minority numbers are. I mean, Hispanic numbers were a little bit better, but with Black communities, forget it. And there's a history there, and the Republican Party doesn't seem to want to acknowledge that history and do what it needs to do to invest in those communities and be on the ground and show these communities that we are here to help you improve your life. And this is why government programs and welfare and, you know, what Democrats want to do with everything is government, 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 why those things haven't worked. You can just look around and see that those policies haven't worked. Some of the biggest failures, urban failures in this country, from Chicago to Detroit, have been run by Democrats for 50 plus years, but yet Republicans are unable to penetrate that hold because they don't invest human capital on the ground and money to demonstrate how Republican policies work. And it's been very frustrating. And I've got to tell you that it's been a frustrating experience. And I just don't know if they're ever going to be able to achieve that, especially now with someone like Donald Trump representing the Republican Party, who has some very questionable ideas and is considered a bigot by many. I don't know how the Republican Party can restore that. I was looking forward to someone like a Marco Rubio being our nominee, who could have made those inroads, but that didn't happen this time around. And I don't know. I think it's going to be tough moving forward for the Republican Party.
Two final questions. The first one, the elephant in the room, why aren't you supporting Donald Trump?
We could spend an entire hour on that topic in and of itself. But look, I grew up in the New York Central area. I'm no stranger to Donald Trump and people like him. And I saw right through him from the very beginning. I had concerns about someone that is that braggadocious, that narcissistic, that insincere and disingenuous, running for the presidency and taking on the responsibility of being the president. Donald Trump is a showman, and I believe wholeheartedly that he's a con artist. And I know his business history. I know how he makes false promises and doesn't, he overpromises and underdelivers. I question his integrity. The way he handled his wives and how publicly he embarrassed his first wife, Ivana Trump, with his mistress, Marla Maples, and that, how that was all over the papers and how he went about doing that, I thought was really disgusting. I know about Atlantic City. This happened in my state. I know how he got involved in very terrible business deals, and he's not the great businessman that people think he is. He's a great marketer of himself, but that's what he's done. He's been able to market himself and use his celebrity and his cult of personality to propel himself to the nomination. And I cannot in good conscience support someone who doesn't believe in the principles that I believe in, who doesn't respect the Constitution, who will say anything to anyone, to any audience, and pander just to get applause lines. And he's manipulating the electorate and manipulating fear at political capital to gain votes, it's very dangerous. So, I think Donald Trump has really turned the whole political system upside down, but not necessarily in a good way. And I've seen some ugliness to levels I've never seen in my 20 plus years in politics. I've never seen anything so much anger and ugliness and just despicable behavior by people. And I've also never seen such hypocrisy either people in my own party who are excusing away things and behavior by Donald Trump that we would never accept on the other side just because they're afraid of upsetting some voters who are following him blindly. And I have no respect for that. So under no circumstances can I support someone like Donald Trump. I think he's dishonest. I think he's a narcissist. And I think, frankly, he has authoritarian tendencies that we on the right have accused Obama of, and yet Donald Trump has said some things and done some things that are comparable, if not worse, yet they're making excuses for him because he's, quote, better than Hillary. I'm sorry. That's not going to fly here with me. Either you have principles and you have character and integrity, or you don't.
And the final question, it's a hard transition to make it to, but it is the question that I ask everyone. How do we get to where, if someone is listening to this and they want to get to where you are today, how could they do it? What's the best advice you could give?
Well, the best advice I can give about that is, first of all, you have to have Teflon skin, because this is not an easy business. If you don't take criticism well, you can't handle being under pressure, thinking quickly on your feet, this is not the job for you. But if you are passionate and honest and prepared, then go for it. Being on television is something that, like I said, I didn't necessarily strive for. It was something that was presented to me because I felt as though it would give me the opportunity to speak to a larger audience, to make a difference in their lives. It really was never about, like, oh, my God, I'm on TV every day. That's still not my motivation. But for some people it is, and if that's your motivation, well, then be prepared for a cutthroat business because it's tough. But being in politics is tough, and being front and center and exposed to all kinds of vitriol and hatred from expressing your viewpoint, that's something that a lot of people can't handle. But if you're comfortable in your own skin and you're very passionate about something and you want to make sure that you get your voice out there, then go for it.
Tara Stepmeyer, thank you so much for coming on.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.